Ben Moore has been in love with bees for as long as anyone can remember. And as far as we can tell, the feeling is entirely mutual. Although he still sometimes feels the sting of his passion. Hang around, learn a little. It's as sweet as honey and always a buzz. It's the Ultimate Pollinators Podcast with Ben, his friends and associates, and of course, Ben's bees.
Hey everybody, Bees with Ben. Wow, big episode today because I've got Dr. John Roberts from Black Mountain in the ACT from the CSIRO going to be talking to us about obviously the research that he does on bees. So super excited. He's a busy man and thank you so much for your time. Really appreciate it, John.
Thanks, Ben. Thanks for having me on.
Ah, really excited. So tell us what. How did this all start for you as far as getting into working with the CSIRO and obviously, the health and biosecurity with bees?
Yeah, sure. So I'm originally from Melbourne and I was working at the University of Melbourne doing my PhD on insect pests in grain crops, actually. And,
okay.
And doing molecular work on those and insecticide tests, assays, things like that. And so when I was coming to the end of my PhD, I was just looking around for jobs and there was this opportunity at CSIRO in Canberra working with Dr. Dennis Anderson, who's pretty well known around the place and around the world really, but in Australia for bee work, but also a lot of his work on varroa mites. So there was a project going looking at a new varroa mite in Papua New Guinea. So this is a different species, Varroa jacobsoni, to the varroa destructor that's everywhere around the world.
Yes.
And so, yeah, it just really caught my attention. It was similar things I've been doing on this other grain pest called lucerne flea, very obscure, not as exciting and and enigmatic as the honeybee.
Yes, yeah.
But so I joined CSIRO to do some genetic work on this varroa mite that Dennis had come across in Papua New Guinea that was causing problems for beekeepers there. So that was how I got into CSIRO and I've been there for just over 10 years now, working on honeybee health and pests and diseases.
Fantastic. And do you miss Melbourne?
I do a little bit. Yes. We get down there for travel, but yes. I certainly don't miss the busyness and the traffic. It's really nice being in Canberra. You leave home and you're at work pretty quickly. So, Canberra's nice, but cold.
I know. I love Canberra because as far as traveling anywhere, it's like a big country town. It's just nice and easy to get around. I love Canberra.
It certainly is. It feels like you anywhere you need to go, you just sort of plan for around 20, 30 minutes. That's it.
That's exactly. So you're working on the Varroa jacobsoni. So that's the one that's there actually for the listeners, sort of targets the Apis cerana, but it's just recently discovered that it can host shift onto the European honeybee, the mellifera. Is that correct?
Yeah, so this is exactly what Varroa destructor did, but decades before in Asia. It made a jump from Asian honeybee, Apis cerana, to Apis mellifera. But this Varroa jacobsoni species has done this more recently in Papua New Guinea only. So it was in 2008 that Dennis Anderson had was called in to look at this new varroa mite problem they were having, and he found that it was the varroa mite that had been on the Asian honeybees there for a while. It had finally jumped across and was causing problems. So now we've got two varroa mite species in the world that pose a threat to Australia. Mm-hmm. Yes. One that's pretty much everywhere, and this one that's in Papua New Guinea, and is actually, I think in 2018, there hasn't really been a lot of attention about it, but in 2018, Fiji reported an incursion of varroa, and it looks like it's the one from Papua New Guinea. So it is spreading its range a bit.
Interesting, because the Asian honeybee, so the Apis serrana, that can comfortably live with the Varroa Jacobs sonii. Is that correct?
They've evolved over a long time together, and they've got a few specific behaviours, I suppose, that allow them to survive with the Varroa mite in their colony. So one of the key things is that the Varroa mite can't reproduce on the workers, and they can only reproduce on the drone brood. And so it really limits that population build-up of the mite. The bees, Asian bees, also have a few other things. They're quite hygienic in terms of grooming. They also can swarm quite a bit. So that there's a few other factors there that help keep those mites at bay. But definitely, by only having the drone brood available to you to reproduce on it, stops them from getting out of control.
Interesting. Wow, very fascinating. And as far as, now you're working on sort of various projects, or you have over the decade, I suppose the most current one which we've seen across the media is the importation of some queens, which is the first time in, I think it's over two decades. Tell us about that, John.
Yeah, so we have a little bit left on that project. We're sort of wrapping all all those results up and getting out a report by the end of the year. But it's been quite a different project to my normal work, less lab time, and but certainly a lot of challenges in terms of navigating the import process and really working in with a lot of different partners to make it all come about. So it's certainly been challenging, but in the end we've managed to have some really good achievements that we can hopefully, the one of the key goals from that project is to open up the importation process more for industry, and some of those barriers that have been there and have made it seem too difficult or impossible for beekeepers and queen breeders to access overseas stock. We're hoping that this project will really make that an easier process, but also making sure that we've got our biosecurity covered as well.
Yes.
Definitely a key part of the project.
So for the listeners to understand, so basically some queens were imported into Australia in this quarantine process, and that's because they have, it's a Dutch variant, if I remember right, and they've got this special hygienic behaviour. Is that, that's fundamentally, in a nutshell, that's why these bees are being coming to Australia?
Yeah, so the project was looking to import Varroa resistant genetics, and so there's different populations around the world. But a group that we were talking with and worked with on this called Arista Bee Research, and they're based in the Netherlands, but have got some other partners in Europe, but also have a component of their business in Hawaii as well, breeding these queens that have this Varroa sensitive hygiene behavior. Okay. And so what that behavior is, it's a more specific version of that general hygienic behavior that lots of honeybee colonies have. So worker bees go around the hive looking for sick brood and will remove that from the hive if they're diseased with one of the brood diseases, for instance. But some bees can be bred that are able to target cells that are infested by the Varroa mite. So they target those bees that have a mite feeding on them, and then they remove those baby bees early and disrupt that mite life cycle.
Wow, it's so fascinating. And so is it, to have this particular characteristics and these genetics, is it, in layman's terms, for the listeners, is it foolproof in the sense of, these genetics of bees can clean the mites and be totally resistant to Varroa destructor?
Sorry, I'm not following that.
Run that past me again. So the question is, if we have these particular genetics and we have that, how Yeah, is it basically, is it foolproof? Like, say, will these bees actually be resistant to varroa mite entirely, or are they just more, you know, so obviously if we introduce, say, varroa mites, we know that the, you know, bees are going to collapse, feral colonies are going to keel over because they've got no resistance whatsoever. So, but are they fully resistant to the varroa destructor?
So in terms of resistance, it's a resistance mechanism that helps keep that mite population low. So yes, it's not that the mite can't reproduce on these bees, it's just that the worker bees you can selectively bred to be really tuned in to hunting out varroa mite in the colony and disrupting the mite life cycle. In terms of whether of how we keep that in Australia is definitely a really good question and a big challenge to go forward from here. So there is certainly varroa resistant genetics around the world that could be useful for us to have in Australia, and that's, you know, such as what we've brought in here. But once you bring those genetics in, we don't have varroa mites in Australia for those bees to flex their muscles, so to speak.
Yes.
And if you're not using it, you tend to lose it. So,
yes, makes sense, yes.
So that's something that is going to be a challenge as well for Australia for trying to bring in varroa-resistant genetics in advance. So some of the things that we're looking at, not a bit beyond the scope of this current project, but we've got another CSIRO-funded project with a postdoc researcher there looking at some of the genomics and genetics of this VSH trait and this VSH stock that we've imported.
Okay.
And there's to try and look at how we can assist breeding programs with some genetic tools to help keep those genetics that you bring in. But we're going to need other types of field tests as well that can help identify colonies that have that behavior. So there's definitely value in bringing in and accessing those overseas genetics where these breeding programs have invested a lot of effort in getting these resistant genetics. But we've certainly got a few challenges here to face around keeping that varroa resistance in place for when we need it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, fascinating work. Absolutely incredible. And it's been, so the first time in 20 years that bees have been able to be imported into Australia. So why has it been such a delay, you know, 2 decades that we couldn't bring them in, John?
Yeah, so there's two parts of the import process. We've got the queen bees, which we just had some of that media around, and that's been probably one of the limiting factors there is that we have had a number of successful queen bee imports in the past, but I think it's around 2015, not sure on that exact date actually, but the a new quarantine facility was established in Victoria. So the previous facility was in New South Wales, and so we have this a new facility to try and bring a lot of the quarantine capability into one facility. So that was down in Victoria, and since that move, there really hasn't been, I think, the industry confidence around doing it through that new facility. So that's certainly been, I think, one of the major barriers for the queen import. The other side of importation is bringing in bee semen. And so that's taken a long time to really get a policy in place so that beekeepers can apply for an import permit to bring in bee semen.
Okay.
And so bee semen has a lot of benefits in terms of biosecurity because varroa mites certainly can't come in on bee semen. But one of the other biosecurity issues that's come up through that is the risk of some of these varroa transmitted viruses. So deformed wing virus is one of the really key viruses around the world that a lot of beekeepers have probably heard of, and the science around that is that it's really this combination of the viruses and the mites that is what's so harmful to honeybees. So for us in Australia, some earlier research I had done is getting around doing a national pathogen survey. We've found that we, as well as not having varroa, we also don't have some of these viruses, particularly deformed wing virus.
Yes.
So that's been something that we want to keep out through the bee semen import process.
Yes.
We want to make sure that we could bring in the semen, but without bringing those unwanted viruses. And so that's also been a bit of a challenge for industry as well. Of just how do we access those overseas genetics through semen, but also have the right sort of testing in place.
Interesting. And so that, so the deformed wing virus, John, so can that be transmitted through the drone bee semen?
Yeah, so there's some studies overseas that have shown that it can be what we call vertically transmitted. So that's from the queen through to her offspring. But what's been kind of encouraging is that that transmission is actually not very good. It's generally spread from bee to bee in the colony through through feeding and things, so horizontal transmission. So what we have in place for the import process for semen is that we can test the source colonies that are going to be providing the semen. We could also test the semen directly and give ourselves some confidence that we're not bringing in.
Okay. So sorry, I just dropped out that little second there. So confident not bringing in the viruses within the bee semen.
So yeah, we're wanting to by having some of these testing protocols in place, we're able to ensure that the semen that we're bringing in is free of those unwanted viruses.
Okay.
And so that's been something that we've also been able to demonstrate in this project, that that's actually possible. That was a bit of an unknown still, because the semen importation also hasn't been tested. So this project has imported the first, had the first semen import for Australia, and also had the first queen import through this Victorian facility.
Wow, that's how fascinating! You're absolutely doing some incredible, amazing research, John. Absolutely, you're you live in a beekeeper's dream. I mean, all this amazing work that you're doing. And so with the queen, talk us through the process. So, how many queens were imported from overseas?
So we only imported a small number of queens to this project for a few reasons. It was really more of a road testing of the process, okay, rather than establishing a full breeding program.
Yep, yep.
But we also had some attrition along the way, and we were hoping to bring in three queens originally. We did have some delays in getting that, getting all the paperwork in place, essentially.
Yep.
And we had to overwinter those queens in the Netherlands before bringing them in, and one of those queens didn't get through the winter, so we had two that came into the facility.
Yep.
And then in the facility, one of the first steps for going through that quarantine process is to go through an incubation period, a holding period for 14 days,
okay,
where they sit with some new escort bees. You give them fresh escorts, and that is designed to allow any tracheal mites, which are an internal parasitic mite of honeybees.
Yes, yes.
And they live in the breathing tubes of the bees. So if there's any tracheal mites on those queens, they will move from the queen onto these new workers.
Okay.
So this is another mite that we don't have in Australia, so it's part of our biosecurity checks. Problem is that a queen bee that's travelled across the world then has to sit for another 14 days,
yes,
in a queen cage. And not that it can't be done, but it's just another hurdle for these queens to jump over. And unfortunately, only one of those queens made it through to be put into a nucleus colony.
Okay. Yep.
And then start producing some start producing some offspring. So I've certainly had quite a few challenges with this stock and this process. But thankfully for industry, we've been all the challenges that we've hit will hopefully be a lot, make a lot of smoother process yes. for those that come after us.
Yes, that's incredible. And so with the queen was put into a nucleus colony. Now, are they allowed to forage outside of that facility, or they can only stay, you know, within the hive, inside the facility? How does that work?
So they're in flight cages. So these flight cages are fully contained. Nothing can leave the quarantine facility. It's a fully contained facility. But these the nucleus hives are free flying within those flight cages. So it's a small room that you have the hive in, and so that the foraging bees can leave the hive and defecate essentially, I suppose, and then come back in. But you have to provide them with supplementary food.
Okay, and the supplementary feed, was that fed in the flight area or actually internally inside the nucleus colony?
Given inside the nucleus colony, yep.
Wow, amazing. Because as you're saying, there's so many challenges. You know, I mean, it's just not, obviously, had that first challenge of, being winter over in Netherlands, and then each hurdle, so many.
Yeah, it's you're asking the bees to do not their preferred
yes.
type of being bees, not their preferred process. But it is surprising what you can get them to do and to put up with for a bit. And so at the moment we've got two of those queens overwintering in the quarantine facility at the moment, and we're hoping to graft some more larvae in the spring.
Okay, awesome. That's fine. And then the next process will be obviously grafting out larvae and then putting them to with control beekeepers. I think David Brinks is
So part of this project is working with there's CSIRO is the lead of this project through Hort Innovation, but we've had David Briggs and Jody Gert from Victoria, who are excellent queen breeders in their own right, and they've been essential to the whole project in facilitating the imports and also handling the stock on the Australian end for sure. So we've got that stock, the queen stock is with David Briggs at the moment, and been able to graft some larvae just before winter. Again, not ideal beekeeping practices, but managing to make it work, and hopefully in the spring we'll be able to get some more material out.
Yeah, that's fantastic. Absolutely awesome. I'm going to put a little link in the show notes for listeners, because it's a really good little on Landline, which was on a week ago. Obviously, when I recorded this, I'll put that on the show notes, because that was absolutely brilliant, the brilliant work that you and the team are doing. And are you working on any other projects at the moment, John?
So I guess we've always got plenty going on. Two things that might be interesting for anyone listening is, I guess, one of my recent projects that's just finished up, that was an AgriFutures funded project looking at chalk root disease.
Okay. Yep.
And this is, so for me, chalk root is certainly one of these diseases that seems like it's over the probably at least last 5 years, it could be even more, but it just seems like it's becoming more and more of an issue for beekeepers. It's typically been something that's more of a minor disease, but certainly in some areas and some beekeepers, that they're really struggling to get away from it. It just seems to be quite prevalent in their apiaries, and it's not something that's always going to knock out a colony, but certainly you're certainly losing productivity there, and you don't want to be hauling around unproductive hives and dead weight. So this project was trying to look at some of the genetic factors and the environmental factors that might be involved with some of these outbreaks. And I guess one of the take-homes from that that we're finding is that the colonies that were had queens that were more highly mated, so had a high number of drones that they mated with, yes, a more genetically diverse colony, were faring better, were less likely to be infected with chalkbrood. And we're also seeing that colonies that had good amounts of pollen stored in the hive, when we were assessing these colonies in the spring and early summer, they were also less likely to be infected by chalkbrood. So there's still more to do in terms of getting on top of chalkbrood, but I think these are some directions we can target to try and that beekeepers can look at to try and reduce that chalkbrood impact in their hives.
And that's absolutely interesting. And what about, you would have heard about putting beekeepers putting bananas in with their hive. What's your thoughts on that to help fix chalkbrood?
I've been pretty skeptical. I've heard that for a while. I've been pretty skeptical for a while. But I must admit, I actually gave it a go last year. I might have. I had a chalkbrood hive, and I thought, you know what? I'm going to throw this banana in. Maybe I didn't do it right, but I didn't have any luck there.
Okay.
So the jury's still out. I think there could be something going on there, but I don't think it's a silver bullet for chalkbrood, but you never know. You never know with these things.
Exactly. I often get sort of recreational hobbyist beekeepers, say, what's all these little black and white things at the front of their hives? And it's kind of, yeah. And sometimes I think it seems to be a bit more of an issue in the humidity. Would you say that too? Yeah, like in sort of Queensland, they seem to have more issues with it.
The environment's definitely going to encourage some of that infection, but it's not purely an environmental thing either. You'll get the conditions can be quite good, and some hives are just going to be more susceptible. So there's no, it's never going to be just a single factor that's going to tip the scales. But it's trying to, with all beekeeping, you're trying to balance everything out. You're trying to keep those hives as healthy as possible and keep them as strong as possible while they're dealing with the elements and dealing with the genetics they've got. It's a tricky one.
It is, yeah. And John, question, as being a research scientist and obviously honeybee pathogens, what's your favorite part of your job?
Favorite part of my job, I guess I've always found it really rewarding, and since doing my PhD work, of being able to get out in the field and just really be interacting with the your organism that you're working with. Yes. So I love doing my genetics and in the lab, but being able to get out and look in the beehives and chat with the beekeepers and see how different beekeepers doing things in different parts of the country, that's really been a great part of what I've done. I've also been really fortunate to be able to travel to Papua New Guinea and Solomon Islands to look for pests and diseases, and so I've been able to again see how they're doing beekeeping in those countries and dealing with varroa, and they've also got tropolalax mites in Papua New Guinea.
Yes.
So that's, I think, one of the best parts of the job, I think, being able to get out and about and get your hands dirty.
Love it, love it. What about the worst part?
The worst part, well, with all science, there's a lot of repetitiveness at times. You've got to stick it out and just repeat something time and time again in the lab when you're pumping through the samples and things like that. So there's always, with any job, I think there's parts of it that you just got to head down, bum up, get it done type thing. It's not the most fun, but it's the end result is what you're after.
Yes, yeah. That's awesome. Well, John, I just want to say a big thank you for your time. That was absolutely amazing, and you're just absolute wealth of knowledge. And what you're doing, you know, basically, you know, you're saving Australia. You know what I mean? Because once this varroa mite does hit, it's going to be absolutely catastrophic. So, you know, to have these genetics and all this work that you and the team are doing is literally going to save Australian bees, because it will be catastrophic. Would you say that if we do get varroa mite? Probably not if, but when?
Yeah, I think I'd probably say that we're not single-handedly saving the bees, but I'm definitely hoping this is an important step in the right direction and helping get us more and more prepared. We've had a long time to get prepared for varroa mite, and I'm hoping that you know, if and when we do get varroa, that we are as prepared as possible. Yes. So, because as you say, it's going to be a real game changer. It's going to, we'll still have bees afterwards, but beekeeping is going to be very different. So, the more we can be prepared, the better.
Awesome. Well, keep up the great work, John. And once again, really super appreciate your time. This is absolutely fantastic. And take care and, all the best.
It's been great. Thanks for having us.
That's all. Take care. Bye for now. Bye.
Thank you so much for listening to Bees with Ben podcast, and we hope you learned some tips and tricks. It would mean a lot if you could please leave a review, and don't forget to subscribe to get instant updates when a new episode is uploaded. See you next week.